Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're tackling something quite specific, intracranial arachnoid cysts, but focusing on kids.
That's right. We're basing this mainly on a pretty recent 2024 study from the Current Journal of Neurology. It gives a really good snapshot.
Okay, good. So let's start basic. Arachnoid cysts. What exactly are we talking about here?
Right. So basically, they're sacs filled with fluid, non-cancerous, thankfully. They form between the brain and one of its protective layers, the arachnoid membrane.
And the fluid is just brain fluid.
Cerebrospinal fluid, yeah. CSF, exactly. And, you know, they're not super rare. They account for maybe 1% of all things found inside the skull, all lesions.
1%, huh? Still seems like a lot. And this study looks specifically at children. Why focus there?
Well, most ACs, as they're called, are found incidentally, meaning by chance, maybe during a scan for something else. And they're usually asymptomatic, no symptoms. But this study looked at 103 children who were actually admitted to a pediatric neurology department. Mm. So these are kids where the cysts or something related was causing enough concern for them to be there.
Right. So not just incidental findings. The goal then is to figure out when these generally harmless cysts might, you know, become a problem.
Precisely. To distill the findings, understand the risks, but without getting lost in overly technical jargon, we want you to grasp the essentials.
Perfect. Okay, so tell us about these 103 kids. Who were they?
So the study took place in Turkey, looking at kids admitted between late 2021 and late 2023.
Okay.
The average age was around 10 years old, 10.1 to be exact, but it really spanned from babies right through to teenagers.
And boys versus girls. Any difference?
Yeah, there was. It was about 62% boys and roughly 38% girls. This kind of lines up with other studies suggesting maybe a slightly higher rate in males.
Interesting observation. Okay, so when they found these cysts, how did they categorize them? Was it just about where they were located?
Location was definitely key. They split them into cerebral, in the main brain areas, or cerebellar, which is at the back, involved in coordination.
Makes sense.
And for the cerebral ones, especially those common ones in the middle cranial fossa, they use something called the GLASSI classification.
GLASSI, how does that work?
It basically grades them based on size, and how much they're affecting nearby brain parts, like the temporal lobe, parietal lobe, frontal lobe, type 1, 2, and 3.
So a higher type means bigger and more impact.
Exactly. Type 1 or smaller, often tucked away without pushing much. Type 2 or larger, extending along a major groove called the Sylvian fissure, sometimes pressing on the temporal lobe.
Okay.
And type 3 are the really large ones that can fill up that whole middle fossa area, really displacing the temporal lobe and maybe even pushing on the parietal and frontal lobes too.
Wow. So size clearly matters there. Did they also just measure the size directly?
Yes, absolutely. Beyond the GLASSI types for that specific location, they also just looked at the maximum diameter of all the cysts and grouped them as either less than 5 centimeters. Or 5 centimeters or more.
Got it. Location, GLASSI type for some, and overall size. Now, why were these kids getting MRIs in the first place? What led to the scans?
Right, that's important context. The number one reason in about a third of the cases, 33%, was headache.
Headache, okay, common enough. What else?
Epileptic seizures were the trigger for scans in about 22% of them. And then another 15.5% had scans as part of figuring out if they had seizures, like a diagnostic workup.
So seizures or suspected seizures were a big chunk.
Definitely. Then you had things like looking into neuromotor developmental delays. That was about 14%. A smaller group had head trauma, maybe 5%.
Hmm.
Signs of increased pressure inside the head. That was about 4%. Actual bleeding in the brain initially, around 3%. One case was even picked up before birth, intracotrine. And then a few for other miscellaneous reasons.
Quite a range of reasons then. Okay, let's dive into the core findings. What symptoms were most strongly linked to these cysts?
Well, as we said, headache was present in a third. Epileptic seizures occurred in just over 22%. And actually, epilepsy as a diagnosis was present in about 25% of the whole group.
Okay.
Neuromotor developmental delay. That was seen initially in 14%. But if you looked at any developmental delay across the board, it was closer to 29%.
Almost a third showing some developmental delay. Interesting.
And here's something specific. The study found that kids older than 12 were significantly more likely to be symptomatic. The p-value was 0.036, which is statistically significant.
Older than 12. Any theories why? Maybe the skull's finished growing, less give?
That's certainly a possibility. Or maybe symptoms just become more apparent or are reported more reliably in older kids. The study also pinpointed the most common locations involved.
Where were they finding them most often?
For the cerebral cysts, the temporal lobe was the most frequent spot, almost 40%. But overall, including the back of the brain, the cerebellum was involved in nearly half the cases, 48.5%.
Cerebellum and temporal lobe, were those linked to specific issues like the developmental delay?
Yes, they found developmental delay was more common when the cerebellum was involved, about 30% of those cases. Same for the temporal lobe, around 32%, and even higher, 50%, for the small group where multiple lobes were affected.
Which makes sense, given what those areas do for motor skills and thinking.
It aligns, yeah. Cerebellum for motor control, temporal lobe for memory, language. But, you know, it's still correlation, not necessarily direct causation proved here. Other factors could be playing a role.
Right, always important to remember. Okay, what about the epilepsy connection? That often comes up with ACs. Did this study shed light there?
It did, and it's quite nuanced. So even though 25% had epilepsy, they didn't find a strong link between the type of seizure and what the EEG showed.
The EEG, the brainwave test.
Exactly. They did EEGs on 42 patients, and almost 70% of those EEGs were actually normal.
Really? Despite having epilepsy?
Yeah. And even in the ones with abnormal EEGs showing epileptic activity, there was only one single case where the abnormal electrical discharge clearly came from the same spot as the cyst.
Only one? Wow. So what does that suggest?
It suggests the relationship is, well, complicated. Maybe the cyst isn't the direct trigger in many cases. Perhaps it's just co-occurring. Or maybe the cyst's influence is more subtle than what a standard EEG picks up easily.
So the cyst might just be an incidental finding in many of those epilepsy cases.
That seems like a very real possibility based on this data. It definitely challenges the idea of a simple cause and effect link for many patients.
Okay. Let's switch gears slightly. What about bleeding? Intracranial hemorrhage, was that a concern?
It was, and this is maybe one of the most clinically relevant findings. They saw spontaneous bleeding, so not from trauma in 6 kids. That's 5.8% of the group.
Okay, not a huge percentage, but definitely serious when it happens.
Absolutely, and here's the key part. They found a significant link between the size of the cyst and the risk of bleeding.
Ah, back to size again.
Yes. The risk was significantly higher if the cyst diameter was 5 centimeters or more. Half of the kids who had a bleed 3 out of 6 had cysts that large.
That seems pretty clear.
And it also seemed that the larger Galassi types, type 2 and 3, were associated with a higher risk of bleeding too.
So bigger cysts, whether measured directly or by Galassi type, seem to carry a higher bleeding risk. That feels like a major takeaway.
I think it is. It really stands out from the data.
Okay, so let's try and wrap this up. Taking everything together, what are the main implications? What should someone listening take away from this research?
Well, a few key things. First, the obvious one we just discussed.
Well,
while most ACs in kids are probably harmless, that 5 centimeter size mark seems important. Cysts that big or bigger seem to carry a higher risk of bleeding.
Meaning they need closer watching.
Exactly. Regular follow-up seems warranted for those larger ones, even if the child feels fine. Second, the study kind of reflects that we're just doing more brain scans now for all sorts of reasons.
Right. Better tech, more preventative checks.
Yeah. So we're finding more of these cysts, incidentally, than ever before. Many might have just gone unnoticed years ago.
That makes total sense.
Third, it supports other research saying headaches are pretty common when kids do have symptoms related to ACs. But fourth, the epilepsy link looks less direct than maybe previously assumed, given the EEG findings here.
The connection's fuzzy.
It's fuzzy, yeah.
Yeah.
Other factors are likely at play. And finally, it confirms ACs can sometimes be spotted even before birth, which is good to know.
Okay. So boiling it down for you listening, what's the single most critical insight here?
I'd say it's this. Arachnoid cysts in kids. Usually okay, but size matters. If a cyst hits that 5 centimeter mark, the potential risk of bleeding goes up, and that means it needs careful monitoring.
Simple but crucial message. And overall, this study adds another piece to the puzzle, right? Helping doctors understand these cysts better.
Absolutely. It reinforces the importance of cyst size in clinical management, even without symptoms. It helps refine how we approach these.
Okay, and as we finish up, any final thought to leave people mulling over?
Well, yeah. Thinking about how many of these are found by chance and how the link to things like headaches or even epilepsy isn't always crystal clear. It makes you wonder what else influences whether a cyst becomes a problem. Are there other subtle factors, maybe something about the cyst fluid itself or how it interacts with the brain around it during development? Perhaps future research will dig into that more nuanced interplay. It's not always just about size or location. There might be more going on.